Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we'll have in-depth coverage on Amazon proceeding with their project in McKinleyville despite public anger. That'll be followed by a special presentation of an in-depth investigative piece on ICE activity in Mendocino concerning the arrest of a Willits area soccer coach. But first, a rundown of today's top stories and headlines. This is KMUD News. First up for the rundown, a feather alert. A feather alert for a missing Tolowa tribe teenager in Humboldt and Del Norte counties has been issued. The alert is for Dandesne Moorhead, who also goes by the name Sparrow. He is 14 years old, approximately 5 foot 7 inches tall, 120 pounds, with brown hair and hazel eyes. Sparrow was last seen wearing an orange sweatshirt, blue jeans, a black shirt, and camo shoes. This again is a feather alert for Dandesne Moorhead, a 14-year-old missing in Humboldt County. He was last seen in Eureka at approximately 9:30 p.m. on May 8th. If you have any information that could help find Sparrow, please call 911. In Arcata news, site cleanup is set to begin on the area affected by the downtown fire. The demolition and removal of fire debris near the corner of 10th and H Street can now proceed following recent release of the site to the property owners by insurance companies. This milestone allows cleanup and recovery activities to move into the next phase. Arcata has been working closely with the property owners to identify a qualified contractor to complete the site cleanup and to help streamline the permitting process with the various regulatory agencies involved with the project. This cleanup effort is particularly complex because the damaged structures and debris crossed multiple property lines during the fire event. As a result, all affected properties must be cleaned and managed together as a single coordinated project. The city appreciates the cooperation and diligence of the property owners who have worked collaboratively to move the project forward and complete the cleanup effort as one unified project. For a project of this size, it is typical to take approximately 4 weeks for the contractor to mobilize and approximately 4 weeks to complete the cleanup work, depending on specific site conditions. The selected contractor is expected to visit the site next week to review site conditions, develop a detailed work plan, and meet with permitting and regulatory agencies prior to mobilization. Arcata will share the project timeline with the public when it is available, so that the community will know when the work will begin and when the project is expected to be completed. Cleanup operations will involve the removal of fire damage materials and debris from the site and loading it onto trucks for disposal out of the area. When construction begins, community members should expect intermittent traffic disruptions in the downtown area during the work to accommodate truck loading, hauling activities, and construction equipment operations. Traffic control measures will be implemented to help maintain public safety and to also potentially minimize impacts. In Trinity County, the Trinity County Office of Education proudly hosted the first annual Excellence in Education Gala on Saturday evening, May 2nd, at the Veterans Memorial Hall in Weaverville. The milestone event brought together more than 110 guests to honor 9 outstanding individuals whose contributions to Trinity County's students, schools, and communities exemplify the highest standards of dedication and service. The celebration recognized honorees across 3 categories. One category is for teachers. Another one included office staff, bus drivers, and paraprofessionals. And the final 3rd category was for community partners, also known as volunteers. 4 awardees were selected in each of the employee categories, and 1 individual was honored as a community partner. The 9 awardees were chosen from a pool of 45 nominees countywide. The ceremony also celebrated a number of recent district retirees, recognizing their years of service to the local community. In Humboldt County, PG&E crews are currently surveying by helicopter electrical distribution lines, other equipment, and nearby vegetation to spot and prevent potential wildfire risks throughout Humboldt County. The flights began in late April and will continue through late May. Helicopters equipped with light detection and raging, aka LIDAR sensors and high-resolution imagery technology, will evaluate PG&E power lines and adjacent trees in rural areas. At each inspection point, the helicopter may hover for up to 10 minutes. Expect helicopter inspections by PG&E in or around the areas of Eureka, Garberville, Arcata, Hoopa, Fortuna, and Myers Flat. The helicopter surveys will be along distribution power lines every day between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., weather permitting. Helicopters will be flying low at an altitude of about 500 feet, but will occasionally hover at times as low as 200 feet. And now to our main stories. Humboldt County's Planning Commission discussed the Amazon Company's controversial local plans in the wake of a contentious public meeting. Daniel Mintz reports.
The Amazon Company's plan to build a delivery facility in McKinleyville is being met with angry mass opposition. But the company is forging ahead and preparing an Environmental Impact Report, or EIR, for the project. A timeline for drafting and releasing the project's EIR was outlined to the Humboldt County Planning Commission at its May 7th meeting. Planning Director John Ford, who had the unenviable job of moderating a rowdy April 29th public scoping meeting, told commissioners, quote, "There was a lot of people there who are very, very opposed to Amazon, so that is something to be aware of." But Ford said the plan is to release a public notice on preparation of the EIR and take comments on it through June. A draft EIR is expected to be completed in September, with comments on it taken through October. A final EIR will be finished sometime toward the end of the year, Ford said. The public scoping meeting included name-calling, jeers, and even a suggestion of arson. The effects on Amazon's plans were discussed in this exchange between Commissioner Peggy O'Neill and Ford.
So the community's response didn't deter Amazon at all? They're not going to go away based on that?
I mean, it caught their attention. I'm not going to say that it had no effect. But I think that one of the things they recognize is that there are some people that just hate Amazon, but there are probably people in the community that believe that some job creation and investment in the community is good.
Amazon seeks to develop a 40,000-square-foot last-mile delivery station in the McKinleyville Airport Business Park. The facility won't warehouse products, only receive and deliver them to area residents in Amazon's vehicles. It's a plan that aligns with the Airport Business Park's zoning and, on the surface, makes constructive use of a property where light industrial activity has been envisioned for years. But in Humboldt County, Amazon is an extremely provocative brand name. The relevance of that to commission decision-making was discussed in these exchanges between Ford and Commissioner Ivor Skavdal and Commission Chair Sarah West.
To be clear, our role in that project is simply a land planning, land use compliance.
It is land use. It is a project that gets evaluated and not the name associated with it.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes those are hard to differentiate between for many people.
Within the scope of our, can we consider economic benefit or detriment within the scope of our purview if that information is presented to us?
To the extent that it may have an effect on public health, safety, and welfare, I would say yes. And that is something that we will be talking to Amazon about, because obviously that was one of the big concerns that was expressed during that meeting. And, you know, it'd be interesting to know whether or not those some of the things that were said are really based on good science or are just thoughts that people have.
Returning the focus to land use, O'Neill noted the project site's purposes in this exchange with Ford.
I think it would be useful also to just have a little historical presentation on when that park was created and what the purposes and uses were planned for it, to show everyone when we make our decision, you know, it wasn't there for a hospital, it was there for industrial or whatever the uses were planned.
Absolutely. We tried to do that during this meeting. But we will absolutely give that presentation. If it comes before the commission, we'll absolutely describe that, because that's an important part of the understanding.
It's set there for a long time with, you know, minimal development, but there were some planned.
Right. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say this, but we really haven't seen commercial development in Humboldt County in the time I've been director here.
Ford has been the county's planning director for 10 years. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Next, we have a very special, in-depth investigative piece detailing a Willett soccer coach's arrest by ICE and subsequent release. Otis Friend was back home within 24 hours after a federal judge ordered his release. But the circumstances of his arrest and ICE's stated intent to find a third country to deport him to have immigrant communities across the North Coast asking who, if anyone, is safe. Lisa Music reports.
Otis Friend, 39, left work on the morning of Friday, May 1st, expecting nothing more than a routine compliance check with federal immigration agents. A quick trip to confirm he still lived where he said he lived, still work where he said he worked. He walked toward his Willett's home near the charter school where he is employed. Six ICE agents were waiting. By nightfall, he was shackled in the back of a van, headed to Bakersfield with no phone, no wallet, and no change of clothes. By Saturday, he was free, released on a federal court order. What happened in between has shaken a community and left immigrants across the North Coast wondering whether any immigrant is safe, even those doing everything the government asks of them. ICE says Friend is an illegal alien subject to a removal order. His family says he held a valid work permit and a court order protecting him from deportation at the time of his arrest. Both may be telling the truth. That distinction is at the heart of what happened. ICE's San Francisco field office confirmed the arrest in a statement to this reporter. Quote, ICE San Francisco arrested illegal alien Otis Nicholas Friend, 39, of Jamaica, May 1st, without incident, near his residence in Willits, California. End quote, said Public Affairs Officer Jason Sweeney. Quote, Friend entered the United States illegally at an unknown time and place and has a final order of removal issued by an immigration judge in 2024. He was released from ICE custody May 2nd following a district court order from the Northern District of California. End quote. ICE's statement noted a final order of removal, but made no mention of a withholding order. Under U.S. immigration law, both orders can result from the same court proceeding. A judge can order removal and simultaneously grant a withholding, barring deportation to a country where the person faces danger. Friend's cousin and Willett's attorney, Colby J. Friend, disputes key elements of ICE's account. Colby said Friend crossed the southern border without prior authorization in 2022 to seek asylum, a process permitted under both U.S. and international law, regardless of how a person enters the country. He was detained by border authorities, held in a detention facility in Arizona, bonded out for $10,000 by his family, and awaited his immigration court hearing while living in the U.S. Colby said ICE's claim that Friend's entry time and place are unknown is inaccurate. Quote, they know because he walked in, they put him on a bus and drove him to a detention center, end quote, Colby said. Quote, that's all part of his paperwork, end quote. In 2024, according to Colby, an immigration judge granted Friend a withholding of removal under the Convention Against Torture, a form of protection that bars deportation to a person's home country when they face credible danger there. According to the American Immigration Council, unlike asylum, withholding of removal does not provide a path to permanent residency or citizenship, Any person granted withholding may never leave the United States without triggering their removal order. Quote, he's not an illegal alien anymore. He's a legal alien, Colby said. ICE disputes that characterization. In a follow-up statement, Sweeney said a valid work permit, quote, does not confer any form of lawful status or prevent ICE from arresting or deporting an alien from the country, end quote, describing it as a discretionary benefit that does not affect immigration status. Otis Friend has volunteered as a soccer coach for Mendocino County youth since he came to the U.S. seeking asylum. If he's deported to a third country, quote, all these kids will miss a mentor and coach and a positive leader in their lives, end quote, a soccer parent shared via the Friend family. To understand why Friend's arrest hit Willits the way it did, it helps to know how he got here and what he left behind to do it. Friend was a professional footballer in Jamaica, well known enough that his team qualified for an inter-Caribbean championship that brought them through Florida. That success earned him a rare 10-year B-1 visa, allowing him to visit the United States for up to 6 months at a time, Colby shared. Around 2018, he used that visa to visit his father, then accepted an invitation from Colby to come to California. What happened next surprised everyone, Colby said. Friend played pickup soccer in the backyard, then in the local men's league, and was so far above the competition that Colby took him to Mendocino College, where the coach immediately wanted him on the team. Word spread. Coaches began recommending him for higher-level clubs. He was eventually offered a spot on the Laredo Heat, which Colby described as one of the top amateur soccer programs in the country, complete with a car, an apartment, and a stipend. With his visa nearing its end, Friend made what Colby now calls the right call, and the one that cost him everything, for a while. He was afraid that if he went back to Jamaica, he would never get back to the U.S. Colby advised him to return anyway, gather his paperwork, and apply through proper channels. Friend listened. He went back. The visa application was denied. Colby said the U.S. Embassy flagged his attempt to also obtain a visa for his son. The door closed. And the situation in Jamaica, where Colby said Friend faced personal danger, made staying feel impossible. So Friend did what tens of thousands of people do every year when legal channels fail them. He crossed the southern border, presented himself to border authorities, and asked for asylum. After roughly a year and a half of court proceedings, an immigration judge granted him withholding of removal under the Convention Against Torture, according to Colby. He settled in Willits. He got a job at a local charter school. He coaches youth soccer, referees matches at multiple levels, and plays in the Mendocino County Men's League, where Colby said he has won the MVP award twice. His work permit had just been renewed approximately 2 weeks before his arrest. Quote, he's been a functional member of the community, end quote, Colby said. Quote, he doesn't have so much as a traffic ticket. Not here, not in Jamaica, end quote. Friend had been checking in with ICE's San Francisco office every 6 months, a reporting interval Colby said was reduced from once a year under the current administration. By Colby's account, those check-ins had been unremarkable. Colby said the agents at the San Francisco office were professional and courteous. Friend had no reason to think May 1st would be different. ICE agents called that morning to say they were coming to his residence for a compliance check. He was at work. He said he'd meet them there. It was close. He left the school and walked over. According to Colby, agents physically restrained Friend against a fence and handcuffed him before he reached the door. Colby and Friend's wife ran out and repeatedly demanded to see a warrant. Agents told them they had one and would discuss it, Colby said, but placed Friend in a vehicle and left, only briefly showing the paperwork to his stunned family. What they showed, Colby said, was not a judicial warrant. Under the Fourth Amendment, warrants must be supported by probable cause and signed by a judge. Administrative warrants, issued internally by immigration agencies, have been found by federal courts to not carry the same legal authority. Colby said the document lacked an affidavit or any supporting application. Word spread fast. Phones started ringing across Mendocino County, at the sheriff's office, at community organizations, among immigrant families who had been watching enforcement actions play out across the country and wondering when it would reach them. Here was their answer. Mendocino County Sheriff Matt Kendall said his office was not notified of the operation in advance and under state law has limited ability to coordinate with federal immigration enforcement regardless. Quote, any time that federal agents come into Mendocino County, everyone keeps associating them with ICE, end quote, Kendall said. As usual, his office fielded a surge of calls from residents, from advocates, from people wanting to know what local law enforcement knew and what it was doing about it. The answer, Kendall said, was not much and not by accident. Under California's SB 54, the California Values Act, local law enforcement agencies are prohibited from using resources to investigate, detain, or arrest people for immigration enforcement purposes. That law, Kendall said, has effectively ended a routine coordination between his office and ICE on immigration matters. Quote, folks seem to think that there is some magic that happens between the sheriffs and immigration, and there isn't, because that's been legislated away, end quote, Kendall said. For residents expecting the sheriff to have answers or to intervene, that was a hard reality. Kendall said he has urged federal agencies conducting operations in the county to have their own public information officers ready to respond to the public, rather than leaving local law enforcement to field questions about actions it had no information about. Without advanced knowledge of the operation or direct communication with ICE officials, Kendall could offer little beyond broad guidance to a rattled community. For those concerned about the legality of what happened to Friend, he offered this, quote, everybody gets their day in court, end quote. For those tempted to confront agents directly, as videos of tense ICE encounters have circulated widely on social media in recent months, his message was equally plain. Do not interfere with state, federal, or local law enforcement in the carrying out of their duties. Friend was transported to Bakersfield. Colby said he was shackled with chains connecting his wrists to his waist and down to his ankles, seated on a metal bench in the back of a van. Stops were made along the way, Colby said, but Friend was not offered water or a restroom break. ICE said in its follow-up statement that transport standards require safe and humane treatment of all people in custody and that restraint procedures follow agency policy. Meanwhile, an attorney retained with the help of the Rapid Response Network was working fast. A habeas corpus petition and a temporary restraining order were filed on Friend's behalf in the Northern District of California. A federal judge granted both, according to Colby. Friend was released on May 2nd, less than 24 hours after his arrest. According to Friend's wife, when agents were asked why they were taking Friend, the agent's response was that Friend had not done anything wrong. His name had simply come up in the alphabetical order they were processing cases. ICE disputed that account. Quote, ICE does not conduct enforcement actions based on alphabetical lists, end quote, Sweeney said in a follow-up statement. Quote, enforcement actions are guided by federal law, agency priorities, and operational tasking, end quote. What ICE did tell the family, according to Colby, was where they planned to send him, St. Kitts, a Caribbean island nation, not Jamaica, the country where Friend's withholding order was grounded. ICE's apparent position, Colby said, was that a withholding order tied to danger in a person's home country does not bar removal to a safe third country. Sweeney confirmed that position in his follow-up statement. Quote, the individual was granted a withholding of removal to his home country by an immigration judge, and ICE is required by law to seek an alternative country for removal, he said. St. Kitts and Nevis signed a Memorandum of Understanding with the United States in January 2026, agreeing to accept certain third country nationals, specifically Caribbean community, CARICOM citizens without violent or sexual criminal backgrounds. St. Kitts Prime Minister Terrence Drew confirmed that the financial costs of the arrangement would be borne by the United States. The specific dollar amount for the St. Kitts agreement has not been made public. St. Kitts is part of a much larger and more extensive web of deals, according to a February 2026 Senate Foreign Relations Committee minority report. The United States provided at least $32.3 million to five foreign governments in direct connection to agreements to accept third country nationals. spent at least $7.2 million on flights to move migrants to at least 10 third countries, and spent $307,000 to house deportees on a U.S. military base in Djibouti. Bloomberg reports an estimated $133,333 cost on average per person deported. And in Rwanda, which received seven deportees, the total cost reached about $1.1 million per person. ICE memos have instructed agents to identify and detain immigrants granted withholding of removal and protection under the Convention Against Torture. People with final removal orders who could not be deported to their country of origin so that they could be deported to a third country. Friend, if the federal court had not intervened, fit that profile exactly. According to Third Country Deportation Watch, which tracks third country removals, the transfers have separated families, cut people off from their communities, and in some cases resulted in detention without charges or removal to countries where deportees face harm. Ongoing U.S. litigation is likely to ultimately determine the legality of the Trump administration's third country deportation agreements. For now, though, Friend has been released. But he is not free of the process. ICE says he still faces a removal order and has been asked to report for deportation. His next court hearing is scheduled for May 14th. The fear that followed Friend's arrest was evident in social media postings. Across Mendocino County and beyond, immigrants who have been complying with every requirement, check-ins, work permits, court orders, renewals, began asking the same question. If it could happen to him, could it happen to us? Friend's case, in some ways, a worst-case illustration of the anxiety that has been building in immigrant communities since enforcement priorities shifted under the current administration. He was not accused of a crime. He was not hiding. He was not evading the system. He was, by his family's account, doing exactly what the immigration system asked of him, and he still ended up shackled in the back of a van. ICE, for its part, has encouraged people in the country without legal status to use the CBP Home app to self-deport, offering $2,600 and a free flight to those who leave voluntarily. Quote, "We encourage every person here illegally to take advantage of this offer and reserve the chance to come back to the U.S. the right legal way to live the American dream," end quote. Sweeney said, quote, "If not, you will be arrested and deported without a chance to return," end quote. However, many don't trust what they see as broken agreements. Those in the process or under protective order being arrested with no notice and sent to a country they may have never been to. Friend's wife says there are resources to help. She acknowledged the assistance provided by the Rapid Response Network and encouraged other immigrants to reach out to their local chapter. What Friend's case illustrates, his family says, is that the line between here illegally and here legally is not always as clear as that message implies, and that for some people, the process of trying to do it right can still end with six agents and a pair of handcuffs. Reporting for Cayman News, I'm Lisa Music.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Michael McCaskill, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Frederico, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz and Lisa Music. KBUD News is online. You can find us on kbud.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.